Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. In the era of woke and cancel culture, the contemporary fictional novel Caleb Blaze, A Tale of the Southwest or The Will to Resist by Mark Gooding, may seem a little bit old-fashioned, but there was a time not that long ago when Americans valued freedom very highly. Foremost among the rights we cherished was the right to express ourselves freely, even when, in fact, especially when our ideas or their expression might offend somebody else. Caleb Blaze goes where, in contemporary American society, it is no longer safe to go, mocking the hypocrisy in American higher education today and the education establishment's pretense of fostering free inquiry. The novel wraps a story of censorship inside the story of a lurid campus affair, exploring the complex question of relationships and sexual encounters between an older person of authority and a younger person. Mark is a product of the American working class, the American Midwest, also a product of the counterculture movement of the 60s and the turmoil it represented. After living in Europe for a few years, he briefly returned to the Midwest before migrating to the Valley of the Sun in the American Southwest, where he's lived for the past 35 years. He taught composition and American literature at a community college in suburban Phoenix for 20 years, written several other novels, retired now, living in Mesa, Arizona, an East Valley suburb of Phoenix. Mark Gooding, author of Caleb Blaze, A Tale of the New Southwest, or The Will to Resist, joins us on This Week in America. Mark, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you, Rick. It's my pleasure to be here. Thanks.
What an interesting novel you've written, and I'm really looking forward to talking about that on the program today. When did you decide to write this book? When did all these ideas come to you that you decided you were going to write the book?
Well, I actually wrote the book about 15 years ago in response to a situation like that's very much like the one that's portrayed in the novel. And, I shopped around for a publisher, couldn't find one. Eventually decided to publish it myself. I wanted it for posterity. That's an idea I'd like to come back to in a few minutes. But
sure.
Anyway, it's been out there for about 15 years. So it's been around for a while, gotten a little attention, but not very much over the years. So
what was it with this story that really compelled you to write the book? What was it that really inspired you to sit? You've written other books, but this one I know you're particularly proud of. Why did you decide to write this storyline?
Yeah, this is my favorite. Well, I should say, I mean, basically the story is, right, community college English instructor, a handsome fellow, maybe somewhat like yours truly years ago. We'll call him our handsome hero. He discovers that a colleague at a different college, a guy he doesn't know from Adam, and who teaches in a different academic discipline, has been suspended from his job and is being threatened with dismissal. Not because of bad teaching or because of some terrible, you know, stealing money or something like that, but because of his political views. And this makes our handsome hero very unhappy, and he decides he needs to intervene on this guy's behalf. Part of what upsets him is that he discovers, and this is actually true, of course, he discovers this situation not from people within his own organization, but from an organization in Philadelphia, which, as you know, is pretty far away from Phoenix.
Yes.
So, and if you don't mind, I'd like to throw them a plug. I just was reading, they were cited in an article I was reading just yesterday again. It's the Foundation for Individual Rights in Education, FIRE. They're in Philadelphia, and they've been advocating on behalf of individual students, staff, and faculty at colleges and universities across the country for at least 20 years and probably longer. So I want to give them a plug because they're out there plugging away on behalf of individual rights. So anyway, our handsome hero discovers what's going on and decides he has to intervene on this guy's behalf. He looks around for somebody in his own district that he can talk to, and his faculty association rep happens to be a colleague in his own department. So she becomes the antagonist and the foil in the novel as he tries to find out what's going on with this situation. So anyway, that's what it's about. A guy being run out of the academy for his political views and our protagonist intervening on his behalf. And it is wrapped inside, as you mentioned, the story of this love affair. People need to be prepared. There's some kind of racy material in the book. this story is derived, it's sort of my modernist retelling of one of my favorite novels in the American canon. That's Nathaniel Hawthorne's The Scarlet Letter. If you remember that story, Arthur Dimmesdale, the Puritan minister, the highly revered Puritan minister, has an ill-advised affair with a member of his congregation. She gets pregnant. She won't reveal his identity because she knows it would destroy his career. They reconvene after 7 years apart and discuss the possibility of just running away, you know, and with, yes, taking their child elsewhere, you know, where nobody will know him. And he decides he can't do that because of his commitment to his faith. And similarly, in a way, the protagonist in my novel is committed to doing something on behalf of this guy who he feels has been wronged by the institution. And so he does make a check because there's no benefit in it for him, right? Nothing for him, the protagonist doesn't stand to benefit. So he does it as a matter of principle. So that's basic. I won't tell you how it turns out. That would spoil the ending.
Well, I was going to let you go and see if maybe you'd give us a little spoiler there at the end, but you have not. So you're going to have to read the book. And it really is an entertaining read. And a lot of topics that you talk about, you really touch on some important topics, don't you, that you've woven into Caleb Blaise.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, one of the concerns I had about the book was it might be a little abstruse, a little bit too, I don't want to say preachy, but, you know, too sophisticated, too academic. I don't think that it is. I try to incorporate, you know, I talk about juxtapose Marx and Freud, for example, but that's not the focus of the novel. I'm using those people to try to elucidate points that I'm making in the novel. So I think it's a pretty snappy story. People tell me that it marches right along. I try to pace it well. So some good dialogue in there. But yeah, I do, you know, it does sort of look at the nature of bureaucratic organizations. You probably noticed that, you know, that these public institutions, what's the primary objective of any bureaucracy? I'm going to suggest that it's self-perpetuation, right? You know, you know, you've heard that before. I'm afraid I see that as being true. So, you know, the organization tries to protect itself, and that's part of the reason that it tries to push this guy out, you know, get rid of the bad egg. So that's, I think, one of the primary ideas that I focus on in the novel. And there's also just the fact that free expression is a principle that I feel very strongly about. And so this novel ultimately tries to be a voice advocating free expression. In fact, I think I mentioned to you before that there are four quotes I used as epigraphs in the novel.
Yes.
There's one from Karl Marx, one from the Scarlet Letter, and then there are two from Alexis de Tocqueville's Democracy in America. And I don't know if you remember, but Tocqueville was himself a member of an aristocratic family that was deposed in the French Revolution. His folks were threatened with execution. I don't think either of them was ever executed, but so he had a very acute sense of this revolution and these budding democracies, and that was his purpose in studying these democracies. And there are a lot of great insights in that book, of course, but one of the insights is that democracies, because they're all ostensibly egalitarian, they have that vulnerability to give rise to factions, and, you know, different people can feed competing for power. And he saw, well, I'll tell you, he saw as a safeguard against that free speech and a free press. And I used a quote from him. If you don't mind, can I read this?
No, please do. Please do. No.
This is from Democracy in America. And he says, but in the countries in which the sovereignty of the people ostensibly prevails, the censorship of the press is not only dangerous, but it is absurd. When the right of every citizen to participate in the government of society is acknowledged, every citizen must be presumed to possess the power of discriminating between the different opinions of his contemporaries and of appreciating the different facts from which inferences may be drawn. The sovereignty of the people and the liberty of the press may therefore be looked upon as correlative institutions, just as the censorship of the press and universal suffrage are two things which are irreconcilably opposed and which cannot long be retained among the institutions of the same people. So obviously his feeling was that people in a free society have a right to know and a right to express themselves. And I share that view of the world. So I mentioned earlier that my purpose for writing the novel was primarily that, to put my voice out there. I don't know about you, but I feel that, you know, my learning experiences and reading and hearing what other people have to say are a great benefit to me in a free society. And
yes,
I feel that that's true in general. I'm probably one of the few people, I don't know how you feel about it, but you know, you hear people complain about the internet and this outpouring of voices we've all been subjected to since the advent of the internet. I'm one of the people who feels that that's a real benefit, much more of a boon than a bane to us, because we need to be able to hear from multiple voices in order to make, as he says, discriminating judgments for ourselves.
Yes. Yeah, that's fascinating. And boy, we could do a whole other program just in talking about, you know, free speech and all the issues that you bring up in the book. Caleb Lays, A Tale of the New Southwest or The Will to Resist by Mark Gooding, our guest on the program. You'll find the book at authorspress.com. Go to our website. There's a link there. You can get information and order the book there as well. What makes this so believable as we're reading it is you were there. You've taught. And so many people think, obviously naively, that, boy, you go to college and it's a free exchange of ideas. That's, you know, everybody has a thought. They're going to throw it out there. People will discuss it. That's really not the case, though, is it?
Not anymore. Not from what I'm hearing. I think this case, and I said I wrote this 15 years ago, This happened at a time when this was sort of a novelty. This guy was basically run out of the institution by his own colleagues. Those are the people who subverted him and ran him out. And I thought it was kind of a novelty at the time. Now it seems much more common and it's much more dangerous. And when I that's one reason I actually resurrected the book, is that it's you hear these stories about people who are about students being given safe spaces, you know, and not being subjected to ideas that they disapprove of and that sort of thing. And that is completely antithetical to the purpose of higher education, if you ask me. In fact, I have thought about resurrecting this book under a different title, because people say I don't like my title, and that's fine. But I would use the title Academic Affairs, because there are three affairs in the novel.
Yes.
There's the affair between the instructor and the other employee. There's the affair of the guy being pitched out of the 86th from the academy because of his views. And then there's the third affair that I think is more expansive, which is the purpose of higher education to begin with. I am one of those, and I sort of make this explicit in the novel. I'm not sure that higher education is living up to its ostensible purpose. You know, you mentioned free inquiry. I think that, to me, that's what college is all about. You've probably heard the old saying, if you get through college without being offended, you should get your money back.
Yes. Yes,
I believe that. You know, you should be offended. It's necessary for growth. The antidote to speech is more speech, et cetera, et cetera. So when I hear stories of people being shielded from ideas that might trouble them for some reason, that really bothers me. And I, as I said, that's sort of the third affair in this novel, is that question about what higher education is supposed to achieve. So,
well, it's interesting because you do bring up some questions. I mentioned there are several themes to the book as you go through. It's very entertaining and presented in an entertaining way. But as you're reading, you're stopping and thinking and trying to see, is this real? Could this happen? Is this actually happening? What do you hope the reader takes away at the end of the book? Do you hope they not only enjoy the book for the entertainment value, but they maybe start asking some questions?
Yeah, I would hope. I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, I taught lit. I taught American lit. That was one of the subjects I taught. And, you know, when you teach an American lit class, you get used to the fact that you're teaching a lot of material that isn't necessarily popular literature. You know, there's a lot of you're introducing people to authors and works that they may never have heard of
Exactly.
before, or they haven't had that much exposure. Or even with, you know, The Scarlet Letter, one of my favorite novels, a lot of students find it difficult or dense and they don't want to deal with it. So, but I think a novel such as this one, that's the whole purpose, is to get people to deal with ideas, especially in our current climate, where there seems to be this inclination to, people talk about disseminating information to the masses, shutting down speech and that sort of thing. That's very troubling to me. That's not how free society works. I'm with Tocqueville all the way on that point. So, yeah, that's the main idea I'd like to have people think about is I think if unless higher education is challenging people's ideas, it's not doing its job. So
And
that's
all of that is presented in an excellent book, an excellent story. And mentioned the critics are saying, yes, it moves along. The story moves along so well, you don't want to like put the book down. You want to go to the next chapter and see what's going to happen. It's Caleb Blaise, A Tale of the New Southwest, or The Will to Resist. Mark Gooding is the author and our guest on the program. Boy, the time is going by quickly. You'll find the book available at authorspress.com. Of course, go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link on there as well. How would you describe the genre of this book? Realist fiction is something that comes to mind. Would you put that in that category?
Yep, that nails it. It's realist fiction. It's there's Scarlet Letter, of course, is a romance, but as Hawthorne said, a romance, to be a good romance, has to teach reality. You know,
Yes.
it has to appeal to people that way. And this book is a realist fiction. That might slow it down for some folks, but I try to make it move briskly enough not to do that. One of my other favorite writers from the 19th century was Herman Melville. And as much as I love Melville, he had a penchant for, bogging people down in some long philosophical discussions. So I tried to avoid doing that. And so I would hope that the book would be entertaining but provocative at the same time. I never write for an audience. I don't write, to try to gain popular appeal. That's never my object. I'm producing a piece of art, essentially, and people will either like it or not, and that's just the way it goes. So I can certainly live without celebrity. I'm not interested in that. But I mentioned at the start that I wanted to put the book out there for posterity because I feel in my own life, there's been a benefit. You read what people said 100 years ago and you take something from it, something of value. And so you want to leave something also for futurity. So that's basically the idea behind that book.
Well, you've done
So.
that on several levels. Again, I keep saying it's a good story. If you just want a good read, this is it. But be prepared because you'll be thinking as you're reading. Like, again, you'll start asking yourself some questions. A couple minutes left in the program. You've written other books. What are you working on now?
Well, I'm not really working on anything right now, but another novel I have resurrected from the past. I think I published that one in myself again in 2011, is a novel called Organisms. And it is drawn from my favorite B sci-fi movie of the 50s, Invasion of the Body Snatchers. That movie was on recently
Oh,
again.
yes.
I just love that movie. So I wrote my own version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers. It's obviously satirical. It's about these two California scientists who discover something they're not supposed to discover, and as a result, they have to run away from the government. And it too is about people falling in lockstep with a certain way of thinking, total conformity. Basically, the book involves these zombies who are just young people who are entranced with a perfect, particular ideology. And yeah, it rings, back again with woke and cancel culture. It's kind of about ideological conformity and the consequences of that. But that's a fun book. I think that one moves well. and it is political satire, but you know, nothing to be taken literally. In that novel, the culprit is a virus that these guys have discovered that turns people into zombies. So, you know, there is no real virus. I don't think COVID turns people into zombies.
Well, you've got my attention on that, and hopefully that's something we can talk about it at some time. Anyway, I've got a minute or so left in the program. I mentioned a product of the Midwest and also a product of the counterculture, same era that I grew up in the 60s. Are you sad that we don't have that mindset anymore, at least to some extent, where we question, where we don't take everything at face value, we're inquisitive, we're almost, I wanted to say necessarily rebellious, but we were rebellious.
Yeah, I think there again, that goes back to the purpose of higher education. I think it should all, and in fairness, Rick, you know, I had a lot of students pass through and they're smart young people, and if they question something, sometimes they don't feel they can do it openly in public, but they'll come to you and question it privately. And so it's good to know, oh gosh, I could tell some stories, unfortunately, about people self-censoring and that sort of thing, being afraid to speak up because they're afraid of ostracism. So they're there. But I just feel they're not encouraged at all anymore. It's, you know, I was just, before we came on the air this morning, I was reading another article about self-censorship within the academy, and it's just disheartening to read that sort of thing. So
it's almost like it's discouraged, isn't it? It's not encouraged. It's almost discouraged to a level.
Yes, it is. Thinking for oneself is not encouraged in this day and age. Yes.
Yeah.
One critic mentioned that as the theme of organisms is, you know, encouraging people to think for themselves rather than just falling in lockstep with the zeitgeist of the time.
Yes.
So, I think that does capture it pretty well. Yeah, I do. This ultra conformity is, I don't know. It's disturbing.
Well, so. it's not the way we grew up. And you sort of think, boy, you're missing something here by just sort of following along with the others. But this has been a fascinating conversation, and it's a fascinating book. It's Caleb Blaze, A Tale of the New Southwest, or The Will to Resist by Mark Gooding, our guest on the program. You'll find the book at authorspress.com. Information, of course, on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Mark, this has been fun. The time has gone by way too quickly. Thank you for being with us on the program. Hopefully we can do this again. Much more to talk about. Thank you.
You bet. My pleasure, Rick. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. Appreciate Mark Gooding, author of Caleb Blaze, A Tale of the New Southwest, or The Will to Resist. Again, you'll find it at authorspress.com. Information, of course, on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.